7 of Week Zero Sports. I'm Michael, I'm your host. I'm here with my co-host, Petty. And thanks for coming back for Episode 7. Petty, what do you got for us this week?
Well, Michael, as always, we're going to start out and talk about a little bit of NFL, a little bit of college recap. We'll preview a little bit of what's coming up this week for everybody. And what's become a weekly edition, more insanity from the state of Florida that we'll touch on in our weekly Darwin Awards. And this week, the cocktail of the week is coming from Michael's Mount Rushmore. So excited to hear what he's got to say on that. We'll I'll begrudgingly do our pick three. Michael will happily do his. But other than that, we'll talk about a few things that happened this week in sports and dive right on in.
Well, when it comes to the pick three, we all know what I'm saying. Had another lucky week last week, but it's coming. We're going to hit. I would love to hit 3-0 before I hit 0-3, but I doubt seriously that that's going to happen.
Look, man, I just don't want to be the Rocky Top of picks anymore. I'm a complete train wreck.
Hey, no. You're not that bad yet. I've seen people that are like minus 20 in our pick 'em. That's the Rocky Top of picks.
Well, I'm 1-2 and 0-3. I'm headed there fast. It's got to get better.
It does have to get better. And you know what? Real quick, before we dive in, let's go ahead and get a word from our founding sponsors.
The Week Zero podcast was made possible by our founding sponsors. First, Workspace Solutions of Charlotte, North Carolina. They provide web design, digital media, advertising, and SEO to their clients. Visit workspacepros.com to find out more. Our second founding sponsor is DreamWork Financial Group of Birmingham, Alabama. They're a registered investment advisor, personalized portfolios, wealth management. They have Spectre and Tempo funds. Visit dreamwork.financial/week0 to learn more. Investments involve risks. See website for disclaimers. Our third founding sponsor is Custom Plumbing and Gas Fitters of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. They do plumbing and gas work for new construction and remodel. They're master plumbers and master gas fitters. Call 205-534-2800. And our final founding sponsor, a Real Rock Thin Stone Veneer by Lambstone Company. They provide interior and exterior stone in thick wall and thin stone veneer. Visit lambstone.com/week0 for more information.
All right, and thanks again. We got to, you know, really show our love to these four founding sponsors that made this happen for us. Without them, we wouldn't be here. So, Petty, how's it going down in Alabama?
Man, it is going great down here in Alabama. Have to apologize to our people out there. We usually would have gotten this out a little sooner, but small-town internet reared its head this week and kind of put a dagger in that for us. And so, hopefully we're back in action and good to go. Where are you at, Michael? I don't even think you're in Charlotte.
You know me, I'm always everywhere. I'm actually coming to you from muggy hot Jackson, Mississippi this week.
my roots.
Yeah.
Going back to my hometown.
Taking a visit to your hometown. And, you know, while I'll say it is hot here, just like it was hot in Alabama, that's where I was yesterday. We're doing a little visit back through the South to see the family. But I do have to say that they do have some fairly delicious beers over here in Mississippi. So maybe when we get craft beer on our Saturday morning cocktail, we might have to do a little short spot on one of these breweries over here that I really like.
Really nice. Well, man, when ain't much else to do over there, I guess they learn to make some good cocktails to make the weekends go by or the weeks.
That is very true. And also on that note, as you guys know, the other half of my family is very blue blood Ole Miss. Unless you're not from here, you know that Alabama's playing Ole Miss this week. Good chance I could get killed here in Jackson. So if you guys don't hear from me next week, you know what happened.
I'll be honest, Michael, if they're anything like me at this point, they're pretty docile and accepting of what is to come. And I doubt you're going to catch much flack.
I brought my Alabama polo, but I don't think I'm going to wear it.
That's just being sweet and not rubbing in the inevitable.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Petty, that's enough about our personal lives. What do you got for us this week in sports?
Yeah. Well, there may be a little personal in here as well, but I want to start off, and this comes from the Washington Post, but there's probably several other outlets that have reported it on this week. We try to catch stuff early in the week, so we're out in front, but stuff might have caught up with us. But this story is actually a couple weeks old, and it's kind of about beer. Everybody's favorite college segment, ESPN Game Day, that you know we used to wake up. The only thing that could get us out of bed early on a Saturday morning was to watch game day and see who Corso put the head on. But the other thing that always kind of growled us out of bed is you want to see the signs and all the crazy stuff. One of my favorites is the fact that the Washington State flag and the dedication to getting that thing on every game day is probably one of my favorite parts. But there was a sign that popped up a few weeks ago from a gentleman that said, I'm out of Busch Light, my stores are empty, send money. And he put his PayPal account on there. And then have you heard about this, Michael? It kind of went crazy from there.
Yeah, so I did hear about this. I think it was in the Iowa versus Iowa State game, and it may have been one of the nights before game day. I'm not 100% sure when it popped up, but the kid held up a sign that said, need money for Busch Light, and then he had his Venmo, because nobody PayPals anymore. Petty, scroll up a
little bit. I'm old.
But he put his Venmo address on there, and he looks down, and within just a few minutes, he's got $400 in his Venmo, and he's immediately starting to feel like, all right, I didn't know this was going to work this way. So he decided that he was going to keep $20 out of it to buy himself a case of Busch Light. First off, I think he needs to go to a different grocery store, because Busch Light should not cost $20 a case.
Good gracious.
But be that as it may, he decided to give the rest to a charity, like the Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital or something like
that. That's
right. Well, once that happens, the word gets out, and before long, that Venmo account is blowing up. It goes viral, and then all of a sudden, Busch takes notice, Anheuser-Busch, and obviously Busch Light, and they offer to match the contributions that he receives to go to that charity. Well, Venmo, not wanting to miss an opportunity for a little more publicity, jumps in there too, and they graciously matched it. And I think they've gotten over $1 million in donations for this children's hospital, just because this dude was basically just like, need money, need beer, send money,
begging for beer. He was begging for beer from strangers.
He was. And on top of that, man. So like the best part about this is on top of it, Busch Light decided that they didn't want this kid to run out of Busch Light anymore. So they gave him a year's supply of Busch Light. And the beauty of it is they created this like custom can that has his face on it.
Really?
Yeah. So he's going to be giving away Busch Lights with his face on them at the pool all next summer. Be a pretty cool guy.
I would become the biggest Busch Light drinker ever if they put my picture on that. I mean, that's got to help with the ladies.
Definitely worth trading like 10 years of your lifespan, right?
But that's definitely one of those, man. How did we not come up with this moment, man? That's awesome. Dude just puts up his Venmo. Not his PayPal. But man, not just that, how many people out there, and let's not get cynical, would have been like inclined to keep all that money themselves and like, man, I just made this sign and I've hit it rich.
You guys, this is a radio show, but I'm raising my hand right now.
Yeah, man. I don't want to say and put myself in that. I'm raising my hand too, because man, I see all that money and I'm thinking, gosh, I've hit it rich. This dude has the foresight and apparently the compassion to immediately turn it and say, I don't need all this money. I just wanted some beer and turned it all into a good cause, man. That's pretty daggum standing.
I agree. And I do think that he deserved, and just like the people at Busch Light probably do, think he probably deserved more than just one case of beer for this. So that's why he ended up with a year's supply. That's pretty awesome.
And at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure that's the same children's hospital that's kind of, there's been most traditions are things that have been passed on for years and years, but one of the newest traditions in college football, which to me is absolutely one of the coolest, is at the end of the third, I think it's the end of the third quarter of every home Iowa game, this hospital that he donated to overlooks Iowa's football stadium. And so at the end of the third quarter, the fans from the home fans and the opposing fans all look up at the kids and wave at them. And it's turned into one of the most chilling, cool scenes in all of college football. You see the kids waving and the fans waving, and here you got a fan that just wanted some beer, and now he's turned it into money for those kids.
It's fantastic, man. That's a good story. And I just like the idea that the man wanted beer that bad that he got up at 9 o'clock in the morning. He must have absolutely ran out of beer because he was able to get up that early, because if he'd had a good supply, he'd probably still be in the bed.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
Well, I know that's, again, ancillary relation to football, but that's where we live. We kind of live on the edge.
That's sports, man.
Good to know then. So what do you got up? What else do you have for us for this week in sports, Petty?
Well, the week in sports last Saturday brought about one of those parent teachable moments in the Petty household, but it was in the inverse, where the parent wasn't the teacher, the child was. unless you live under a rock or you don't watch highlights, I don't expect everybody to watch this game in real time. But 11:30, Ole Miss, or 11 o'clock, Ole Miss played Washington, California. And at the end of the game, we mentioned this term last week, the Foot Locker employees completely screwed Ole Miss. There was a play that looked to be a touchdown that would have given Ole Miss. And look, let me preface all this with, I'm not blaming the loss completely on the officials, just the chance for Ole Miss to steal victory from the jaws of defeat, because they had horrible clock management in the final 2 minutes of the game. They should have had a timeout left. There was one play where they ran a draw play right up the middle with time running out. But anyway, that's all. I don't want to completely blame the refs on this. But there was a play that looked like Ole Miss scored. They inexplicably didn't review it. They review plays in the middle of the field that, for much less. This is a potential game tying touchdown that they don't even look at.
One quick question here. This game was in Oxford, but it was Pac-12 referees. Is that right?
It was Pac-12 referees. So it was the team who had everything to lose, home refs. Well, anyway, this happens. And then fourth down, Ole Miss tries to rush a play. The Cal defensive line had two guys lined up pretty much next to Ole Miss's running backs. No flag was called, which would have led to an untimed play, and Ole Miss loses the ball game. The 13-year-old adolescent that's in every male burst out of me at that moment, and I started letting...
Did you throw your controller, Petty?
I threw a tantrum is what I threw, and I threw it at the referee and a TV, at people that A, would never hear me, B, wouldn't change the result, and C, kind of got my youngest daughter, my 9-year-old's attention, and she comes out and says, "Dad, you do not need to be saying those things." Well, 13-year-old me is really ticked off at this moment. I'm pissed. And I said, "Sweetheart, I'm an adult. Dad's angry. You don't tell Dad what to say. If you don't like what Dad's saying, go into another room where you can't hear it." And she immediately walks off. And I'm like, "Oh, Lord." And so once I calmed down, I realized, wow, I'm an idiot. I'm yelling at a TV that can't hear me over a game that doesn't matter. So I walk back, and my little girl's sitting there, and she's not crying yet, but I said, "Sweetheart, I'm sorry." And the tears burst. And it was the teachable moment was me saying, "Look, you're going to learn in life that even parents screw up. I just did. I don't want you to, this is a game. Games don't matter, sweetheart. You should never be this upset over something that doesn't matter. And your dad should never act like that. And you were right. I shouldn't talk like that. However, if that stinking idiot referee would have made the right call, Daddy wouldn't have had to act like a big moron."
I'm sure that she understood that perfectly.
I didn't say that last line, but the 13-year-old in me was still kind of pissed off. But it was a moment where, you know, my daughter was calling out the dad, and she was absolutely right, man. She kind of got me in the dadgum feels, and I kind of loved on her, and we hugged and hung out for the rest of the day, because she'd been chilling watching the game with me, and I do not want my kid to think that that's the appropriate behavior for something that matters so little. And so at that moment, the 9-year-old was the bigger kid in the house.
Well, don't be too hard on yourself, Petty, because let's face it, we're all dudes, and girls are smarter than us.
Yes.
Even 9-year-old girls are smarter than us, and I'm fine with that. I have no problem with it. Yeah. I'm going to be happy being my happy idiot self. I didn't know you were going to like pre-prime the pumps for all the fields today to get everybody nice and sappy first. So you better have a good one coming in here, right?
Well, that kind of leads us, like you kind of made a segue into my favorite segment of the show, that's presented by Lambstone, makers of Real Rock, presents All the Feels.
And get your tissues while we allow our sponsor to say a few words.
Real Rock Thin Stone Veneer by Lambstone Company. They've been in the stone business since the 50s. They specialize in a natural thin stone veneer that can be used for almost any application. From exterior veneer to veneer inside your home, the possibilities are limitless. Look, don't fool around with the fake stuff. You don't buy your wife a cubic zirconia engagement ring. Get the real thing from the real source, Real Rock Thin Stone Veneer. Visit them at lambstonecompany.com/week0 to browse their inventory of Real Rock.
And thanks again to Lambstone for making this segment happen. It's one of our favorites. Petty, what do you have for us on All the Feels?
Well, this one comes to us from ABC News. Man, this one is one of those moments in life that I think a lot of people who kind of struggle at times for cash have thought of, like, man, what if somebody with money could just help me out? Well, this is one of those incidents where it happened. Rapper Lil Uzi Vert, who I admittedly have never heard of until this story.
Hold on a minute. Could you please repeat that name again?
Lil my southern Lil, L-I-L. I'm losing all my gangster cred.
Lil Uzi Vert, I think.
Lil Uzi Vert. God bless. I can't say that any less southern. I'm sorry, guys. Lil Uzi Vert. I've screwed. Man, all the feels just went out of the door with my enunciation of this poor cat's name, who is making a lot more money than me and doesn't care, probably. Rapper Lil Uzi Vert offered to help a student out. Raheel Ahmad, a 20-year-old political science student at Temple University, was at the King of Prussia Mall outside Philadelphia when he saw EXO Tour LF3, still messing this up, artist. So apparently it's a group, like a wrestling group. He's in a gang of artists, and that's their tour name, was coming through a department store with his entourage. This is what Raheel told the ABC Philadelphia station affiliate WPVI. It was at that moment he pulled out a cell phone and recorded himself asking, "Hey, Lil Uzi, can you pay my college tuition? I know you can do it." He said, "Hey, I go," and then he said it again, "Hey, I go to Temple. Can you pay it? It's $90,000. Well, Lil Uzi stops and says, "90K? And I mean, you see him on the video stopping, "90K? Yeah, you're right. I can pay that." And everybody just kind of stunned, and everybody stopped all around. And then the scene was this. And he said, "But I'll tell you what," he immediately laid out some provisions. He said, "Give me your information on social media so we can get up. But I want to see your transcripts and your records to prove that you are going to school and you're making the grade. You provide that for me and I'll pay your $90,000 tuition." $90,000 in tuition. We're not talking about, "Hey, here's a couple hundred dollars to pay for your books." He's paying this kid's entire tuition. Well, the kid has come back on YouTube and reported that he was a man of his word. He got his information. He showed him his transcripts, and now his college tuition is taken care of. And man, I probably didn't say it in a way that gave you chills, but if you go look up the video, it's just one of those moments in life where you kind of swing for the fences, knowing that you're probably not going to hit the home run, but all of a sudden something in Lil Uzi's heart, which is apparently really big, stops and says, "You know what? I can do this."
And you know what? Now that we're graduating to the year, probably 1999 in our podcasting, I have a feeling we can actually post the link to this on our social media.
Oh yeah. So check out our social media, our Facebook or our Twitter or website, and you'll see this posted here. It's really, really awesome, man. And like I said, it just, what got me is that you got this kid swinging for the fences, but the heart of this guy just to stop and say, "You know what? I do have that kind of money. Let me take care of you."
Do you think the kid was a fan, or was he kind of being a smart ass, or do we know?
I think he was probably a fan because he knew he knew to be that, like, the entourage was coming through. I guess they may have had a signing or some photograph session that was going on at this mall that day. So he knew. And I think it was just one of those organic moments where he's like, "Man, here's a guy that's got a lot of money. Maybe he can help me out." And shoot, he received.
Well, props to Lil Uzi Vert. I'd like to look up some of his music and listen to it if I can tolerate it. Not that I don't like rap. Don't get me wrong.
We're old school, though.
I love rap. It's just that if I haven't heard of him, it means it's probably that kind of grungier rap that I probably won't like.
it just more means I am getting old. If it's not, I mean, I think my last Eminem is about where my rap knowledge ends.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I completely turned it off, but I definitely am not an expert anymore. But I definitely want to catch this guy.
Yeah.
See what he's got, because he sounds like he's a pretty straight up dude.
Yeah, definitely make you want to listen.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Well, like we said, check facebook.com/week0sports, at week0sports on Twitter, and we will post a link to this video out there so you guys can get the feels just like Petty did when he saw this happening.
Yeah, props to you, Lil Uzi, and props to you, Raheel. I'm glad that worked out for you, buddy. I know that's, man.
Well, you know, at the beginning of this show, I was kind of sitting there punching myself in the face for not thinking of putting up a sign at game day asking for money to fund my beer in college. I mean, that was freaking genius. But talk about, you know, that guy came out $400 and, you know, or $220 and a year supply of Busch Light. This guy gets 90 grand in college tuition. I think Mr. Ahmad is a little bit smarter than our game day sign guy. What do you think?
Oh, look, you're talking to a guy who lives in a household of two people that had student loans that I'll be paying when I get to the other side still, it seems like. So, man, yeah, this is awesome. really, maybe that's why it got me, because I'm like, man, I wish that would have happened for me.
Petty, I am 100% sure that your student loan debt is only a shadow of mine and my doctor wife's.
Oh my gosh. Well, Chris went on to the advanced degrees as well. So mine's a shadow of hers, but it's all together. It creates a big shadow. So yeah, like I said, maybe that's what got me in the fields. I was like, man, that'd have been nice.
Maybe it was. You were having like bank account sympathy.
That's right. That's right. And I knew that guy was just got it. You got a little easier.
There are a few things in the world that are capable of triggering tears. And besides, you know, family, work and all of that, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that bank accounts can definitely do it too.
And I'm not one of those that begrudges people who get those kind of breaks. I actually am happy for them. It's not like, well, damn, what can that happen right for me? I'm actually like, man, that's awesome that it happened for somebody else.
Oh, no, me too. And I mean, that's a really good, it's a really good story, and appreciate you digging that out for us. But
now that
everybody's feeling a little bit good, let's go trash some people in the NFL. What's going on this week in the NFL?
Well, man, actually, we're probably going to start out still propping some people up. Last week we talked about the major injuries at the quarterback position, probably reshaping the playoffs and who could possibly be in the Super Bowl. But man, a bunch of guys that stepped up for injured guys did really well, and then there were some guys that took over for some guys that got benched that did really well also. And man, it's just, again, it kind of goes along with the theme that there's a crop of young quarterbacks playing some good football. How will it last? Who knows? NFL defenses always seem to figure it out. But
there's another thing, too. I think we should both get out our plates and our forks and our knives and whatever crow you can find and eat a big pile of it, because Teddy Bridgewater played like a quarterback this week after we made fun of him last week. So I've got to go ahead and you know, take the beating that we deserve for that, because he woke up.
He didn't just light up the stats, but he didn't cost his team. He was very efficient. And what it hit me, and I was like, man, here we are saying, well, it's Bridgewater. What'd you expect? But before he got injured in Minnesota, he was actually had a trajectory to be, he was actually playing really good in Minnesota before he got hurt and that all got derailed.
Right. You know, that just shows that immediacy is what's the most powerful, you know, factor in your memory, because going back and thinking about what you were saying, yeah, he was doing good in Minnesota, got hurt, didn't see him for a while. And we're like, where did this guy come from sitting on the bench? Yeah. Like, you know, AJ McCarron.
Yeah, here we pride ourselves on our sports knowledge, and we get caught up in the recency bias of what have you done for me lately? And that's just, you forget that we're not in a microwave society as much as everybody makes it, and people can come back and still get better or you know, progress after they've had a few rough years.
Drew Brees.
Yeah. But shoot, not just him. Kyle Allen stepped in for your hometown boys up in Charlotte, and man, kind of made the, is Cam Newton done? Echoes get a little bit louder, because he looked pretty good.
I don't know if I've actually told this on the podcast yet, but my fantasy football team name is Never Cam.
Well, you also mentioned that there was something holding you back from becoming a full-blown Panthers fan, and that reason may be gone now if Kyle can keep it going, because he looked really good.
I was riding in an Uber with a guy in Charlotte the other day, and this guy said, man, Cam looks like my grandma.
the way he dresses, he looks like he's going, like Little Red Riding Hood's about to come visit him.
Right. Yeah.
Or he's about to sing I'll Always Love You in The Bodyguard.
Well, to keep me from getting on a Cam Newton tirade or whatever, let's just go ahead and say that all the best to Kyle Allen.
Yeah. Best to Kyle. And man, one that kind of punched me in the gut, because it's the end of an era for me as an Ole Miss fan and as a kid that grew up hearing the name Manning, you know, that Eli got benched. And look, man, it's one of those things that, you know, we've discussed Father Time's undefeated, but boy, Daniel Jones came and gave a spark to New York that they hadn't seen in a couple years, man. And not just throwing the ball, but with his legs. The kid looked really good.
I'm a firm believer that any team in the NFL has enough talent to win every day. It's a matter of motivation. And sometimes, and I saw this, and I hate to go back to, you know, Bama fandom or whatever, but when Bama was playing Georgia in that national championship game, and that team just looked defeated, and they put in a new quarterback, and everybody started playing harder.
Yeah. You know?
So not all the credit goes to Daniel Jones. I don't want to take too much away from Eli, because Eli has been, you know, a stud, for lack of a better word, in the NFL for as long as I can, you know,
since 2004,
yeah. Drinking beer, basically, right?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, he's been great, but seeing that new, that Daniel Jones being able to run out of the pocket and just having a little bit of movement back there, I think it really changed the game. And it just did it. It gave him a spark, and it was probably a really good coaching move.
And man, shame on us. We failed to mention Gardner Minshew, Uncle Rico down at taking the world by storm. I mean, this kid got passed up by Ole Miss and Mississippi State in his home state, goes to East Carolina, kind of has he doesn't just set the world on fire. He does the grad transfer thing, was actually going to transfer to your school, the University of Alabama. Well, mine too, I guess.
Yeah, to be basically a headset guy.
Well, no, he knew. They said, you're going to be the four-string quarterback. He said, well, I'm coming here to learn to be a coach. And then the Pirate stepped in and said, no, you're coming to my school to throw for 5,000 yards and go to the NFL, son. Which, who saw that coming? But, man, it's like he's in on the joke. So many people take life so serious, and Garner is not one of those dudes. I mean, he shows up with the mustache, with the silk shirt.
Dude, did you see that if you – and one of the things that we're going to talk about heavily one week, and we keep putting it on the slate and it hasn't quite popped off yet, but it's coming soon. And that is the Pirates Twitter account. We are going to get in on this Washington State Cougars Twitter account deeply. But one of his most recent tweets that I loved was a picture of Gardner Minshew standing right beside real Uncle Rico on the
Yeah.
It's like two Uncle and Ricos.
Yeah, and most coaches who, hey, I'm proud of you, Gardner, you know, they're going to do the coach speak on there. The Pirate says, hey, there's two Uncle Ricos. You know, right. just straight playing into the joke. Gotta love it, man.
Yeah, he's awesome. I can't wait till we do that. And that's coming soon. I don't know if it's going to be this week, next week, week after. You're going to get a dose of the Pirate Twitter account because it's awesome.
Well, all right. Well, we've talked enough new quarterbacks. Michael, the thing I kind of also want to talk about is it 1992 all over again? I mean, the Bills, the Cowboys, and the San Francisco 49ers, as of right now, 3 weeks into the season, are undefeated. Are they? I think the Cowboys are legit. Are the Bills in San Francisco legit?
I don't know, but I hope the Bills are legit, because watching hashtag Bills Mafia on the internet is one of the greatest things on earth. What a bunch of idiots. I love them. I almost want to be a Bills fan. They're crazy.
Oh, yeah. A, their uniforms are top notch, and it's easy to pull for a pretty uniform. I'm one of those guys. And yeah, man, they've got a crazy fan base.
They're destructive. They break things when they win, and I love it. I love it. It's like taking the West Virginia couch burning to the next level altogether.
That's it. It's the NFL version of West Virginia. If you haven't watch what Bill fans do in their pregame rituals and stuff. They're absolutely bonkers.
Oh, we're going to stir up a lot more action on our social media account. We're going to find, before this week is over, before next episode starts, guaranteed, I'm going to find you some great Bills Mafia footage.
Oh, I think most of them are stuck in the Ric Flair mindset. And I mean, half of them are like jumping through tables and stuff at their tailgates.
Awesome. No, I saw that. I know exactly which table breaking video you're talking about. And I will make sure that one makes our social page as well, because it is awesome. But you know what? Like, whatever it takes to get to Ric Flair status is worth it, because that guy lives.
Woo! Well, dude, I guess when it's 10 degrees and you've been drinking whiskey, you just got to make sure your body's not numb, so you jump through tables. But you also, San Francisco, man, Garoppolo, he came out there kind of heralded because he was backing up Brady in New England. Everybody kind of thought he was going to take over for Brady, and people think there might have kind of been a coup to get, you know, Brady kind of wind to the front office to get him out of there. Well, he gets to San Francisco and immediately gets hurt, and it's kind of that, what have you done for me lately? Everybody's forgotten about him. But, man, he's now healthy, and San Francisco's come out of the gate hot, and he's a big reason. But I'm kind of getting in a ramble mode about the NFL. I just kind of like the fact that it seems like 1992 all over again. That was a fun time in the life. And I don't know. We'll see where these teams go from here. But let's get on to the main show, the college football. What you think?
Oh, right. Well, we've got a decent slate this week. It's nothing like last week, and I don't anticipate a Saturday morning game day review this time, because it's just not that good of a slate. But we got some good stuff coming up. I know you were – We would be remiss if we didn't take at least a few seconds to talk about our favorite topic, Jim Harbaugh, and what a performance against the Badgers last week. Petty, did you see that game? I mean, go blue, right?
Yeah, I had Ole Miss on the big screen, and I had Michigan, Wisconsin on the laptop. And man, I'll be honest. It was one of those moments where I was like, man, we kind of nailed this on the podcast, because I said, the big issue here is Wisconsin hadn't been turning the ball over. Michigan has. Michigan immediately turns it over deep in Wisconsin's territory. And at that point, the onslaught.
That was it. Began. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. That drive, when they turned that over, that was it.
I saw a stat today, Michael, of the top 10 teams in the country and how many players on each team's roster are 4 or 5-star players. Only one team in the top 10 has less than, is in the single digits. The rest are in like the 30s and 40s. That's Wisconsin. Yeah. They have 9 4- or 5-star players. So about that SEC thing, cheating, dude, you just played a team that has 30 to 40 less blue chip players than you. So obviously they're not cheating and pulling the whole SEC shenanigans.
Harbaugh's recruiting like an SEC team.
He absolutely
they took teams from many. I saw many recruiting battles.
Rashawn Gary, just a few years ago, they beat Clemson out for that kid. You know, Clemson. But the thing that struck me is, like I said, here they have Wisconsin's got 9 blue chip players on their team, and they just beat you 35-13, dude. If you're a Michigan fan, you need to pull your head out of the sand. Harbaugh is not a good coach. I'm calling it right now. If he was, he wouldn't be losing games like this. He wouldn't be going to overtime with Army. He would be obliterating these teams. But we can drone on about Harbaugh. Harbaugh, congratulations. You suck. It's time to move on.
Agreed on that. But on the other hand, don't fire a coach that has won you 10 games before, when you're probably not going to get anything better at this point. I mean, right now, the biggest, there's probably two big guys that everybody would want to get, like Urban Meyer and Bob Stoops. Urban Meyer's a 3-year coach, so you get what you get for a couple years. Stoops is old. He's going to be, if he comes back to coaching, it'll be a Spurrier situation.
And I mean, the buyout, I think, on Harbaugh is like absurd. I mean, they're stuck with him for a while, I think. And Meyer wouldn't go from Ohio State to Michigan. I see Meyer going out to sunnier pastures before he would go back up north.
Right. And I honestly Michigan has the tradition and everything to get a good coach and stuff in there, but you don't want to go out right now. They've got a big name coach that I don't think it would suit them to fire Harbaugh.
No. I mean, they'll end up with another Brady Hoke and be, you know, right.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing.
Exactly.
To be honest, they may be one of those blue bloods like Nebraska or Rocky Top that has passed their prime, and it may be hard to pull out of it unless they make that Nick Saban type hire that's kind of off the radar right now.
It's hard to drag somebody to Ann Arbor, Michigan to live there during the winter. I mean, that it's tough. So I can see that. But again, like you said, enough about Harbaugh. Hopefully this is the last time we talk about him in the podcast ever, until he's fired or until he wins a national championship.
We'll make a promise to you guys out there. We will try to stop the Harbaugh talk. He just makes it impossible not to make fun of at this point.
So what other games were you looking at last week?
Man, of course, the big game out in College Station that kind of, I think, surprised some folks. Boy, Auburn came out and just punched A&M in the mouth. They had a better game plan. They were more physical. It was probably one of Gus Malzahn's best play calling games I've seen in a couple of years, and I think Auburn fans would agree.
I perfectly could say that it looked just like every game that he's ever called to me. They ran the exact same sweeps, the exact same window dressing, the exact same all that. Their defense just is badass. They got a guy on the defensive lineman that will kill you.
But he did some. I think he mixed in the Gatewood kid, like I kind of expected. And everybody, A&M was piling up for the run, and Malzahn pulls out the pass with this kid, and I mean, just burn him to death. Maybe it looks like better play calling when it works, but I don't know, yes. Man. I thought they were dialed in.
They take you off of your – they make sure that you can't move the way that you want to move. You can't just go and react like teams. Like, they teach these defenses that when the ball snaps, you react to what's happening. Well, if everything you see is the exact opposite of what you were expecting, your reactions suck. And that's what they do to people. And that's how they are able to beat people with less talent a lot of times and make them look bad, because Malzahn's goal is to just get out there and run plays for, you know, run 75 or 80 plays, and 4 or 5 of them really matter in the game. You know, he's got 4 or 5 plays that are going to score a damn touchdown. And he saves them for the right time. He's very good at timing those, especially in big games. When I see Malzahn sucking is when they're playing crappier. When they're playing lower competition, that's when he looks like he's just going through the motions.
Well, and I think if those are the times where he tries to prove he's the smartest man in the room and does stuff that's a little too cute that just doesn't work. Instead of sticking with what does work, which obviously was this week. And look, when you've got a legit top three national defense, it's going to make your team look good. And they do, man. That defensive line is absolutely for real.
And I can't remember. Is it Brown, the guy?
Yes.
Just the freak show. Take him off that defensive line and they're good. They're not great.
Yeah.
You know, you take him off. He is a generational talent as far as I've seen one in defense this year in NCAA football. He manhandles his double teams. The guy, he's a beast and he disrupts every play. And that
he's
guy
a
right
clowny
there is the
type
deal.
Disruptor. You put him on it. Clowney completely made South Carolina look like one of the top defenses in the country.
Except for Clowney tried like one out of every five plays. This dude tries every play. So it makes him 10 times better than Clowney to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
When Clowney tried, he was unstoppable. That guy was lazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, he didn't even try his final year. He just quit playing.
Right. Exactly. Need that check.
A quick hitter. Sorry to one of our sponsors out there. Rocky Top, I'm done with you. I gave you the benefit of the doubt. I thought for some weird reason that y'all would keep it close on Saturday. You didn't. It's over. It's done.
The end.
I mean, they had three more transfers this week. It is a sinking ship.
The end.
Man, the game that everybody watched. Notre Dame was more physical than I expected them to be. They actually punched Georgia in the mouth and gave them all they wanted. I think Kirby Smart said as much leaving the field at the half. However, man, and I don't want to sound like some Southern homer, but Georgia looked tight to me. They looked like the team with all the pressure. They've been reading the headlines that this was going to be the night that separated them from the pack. But more than their players playing tight, I wasn't real impressed with the offensive coordinator. He seemed to kind of get cute.
Yeah, okay, so you got there. That's what I was about to just jump in and be like, okay, I don't know if you watch the play calling on the Georgia side of the field, but when you're trying to get cute and run around the ends and
that
just go generally trying to be what? Like when they just turned and pressed at if they ran straight up run plays and not RPOs and anything cute like that, they blew them off the line and ran them over. When you're bigger, stronger, and faster than another team, run them over. You don't have to be cute then. That's when you just freaking line up and run them over. And that's what needed to be done right there, because when they tried to get cute, they can guard the cute stuff.
Yeah, Notre Dame got sideline to sideline with them, which I think that's the physical part that shocked me, is Notre Dame did have the speed to get to the outside. But that's, again, I think a coach that was trying to be too cute. You've got Notre Dame, who coming into the game had one of the worst interior rush defenses in the country. You outsized them, you out-physicaled them, and on second and two, second and three, third and one, they were running swing passes and stuff. And I'm thinking, go up the middle. You've got the best running back in the SEC in DeAndre Swift.
Hit the tackle.
And in the second half, I think Smart went into the offensive coordinator and said, quit getting cute, damn it. Run the ball up the middle. And that second half was a completely different ball game, where Georgia still, the only touchdown they gave up in the first half was on a muff punt in their own territory. But the game could have got – they could have pulled away a lot sooner if they would have just started – if they were running up the middle from the first quarter on.
They did not control – they had the ability, they had all the tools to control that game from start to finish, and they didn't – they Georgia does not know how to dominate a game. They still have not got that mindset in where they're going to go in and just run everybody over and defeat them. They think that they're good and they're going to win because they're good, not because they're motivated. And I saw a team – that didn't go out there to think that they was bigger, stronger, and faster than Notre Dame. Like, they were bigger, stronger, and faster, but they didn't act like it. And that was the difference. Maybe they needed a little bit of that freaking Alka-Seltzer in the mouth treatment, like you were talking about from
Little
Giants all the time.
Well, and I tell you, if they run the ball up the gut, or not every play, but if they go out physical in the first quarter, by the third quarter, those six-yard runs they were breaking off would have been 15, 20-yard gashes.
Absolutely. And if they would run running plays, and that's one of the things that I hate about this RPO offense that's coming around everywhere, is it sucks for linemen when they can't just get out and go whoop their boy on a running play because they have to be careful and not go 5 yards down the field because it could be a pass and they'd be downfield. You know, I mean, it changes the game it makes it harder to dominate the line of scrimmage on offense if you're not running at them. And I think that in a game, when you out-physical somebody as much as they did, and just looking at them lining up, you can see there was a distinct difference in size between the Georgia players and the Notre Dame players. The Notre Dame players played above their skill level, and Georgia, like you said, was out there flat-footed trying to
be cute.
Trying to be cute and fancy, you know. No. You know, it was like when you go to the steakhouse,
know your lane.
And you order a really good steak. You know, you go and you want a really good steak, and you go in, and you order this badass ribeye, and it shows up at the table, and you're like, "What the hell is that? You know, what is this little shriveled thing that you brought to the table? I wanted the big, huge ribeye. What's going on? You know?" And that's kind of how I felt when I saw Georgia's team run out on the field the other day.
Yeah. I agree.
And maybe I'm a little mad because I did, in everything I looked at, it looked like they were going to blow them off the field.
Yeah, I didn't even care that the line seemed like a bait, that it was too low, that it was screaming. I didn't care. That was one of the times, like, I don't care if you're baiting me, Vegas. I know what I see. I know what I know, and I know Georgia's the better team, and they just stuck it to us.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, that's enough bitching and moaning because we were wrong about that one.
Maybe that's part of our bitterness at you, Georgia, is we all had you. And my final takeaway from the weekend that was is, and we've talked glowingly about this guy, even in this podcast, but Pirate, Wazoo, what the hell? I go to bed and you're up by 30 points against lifeless UCLA. We've already fired Chip Kelly on this podcast. We've talked about how his offense knows nothing. And it was one of those moments where you wake up the next day and you're wanting to know a score of a game, but you fell asleep. I know you've done this where you're like, hey, I took this game.
We all did it.
And so you wake up, you look at the score and you're like, wait, hold on. That's a misprint. 66-30. UCLA scored 50 points in the second half. They hadn't scored 50 points combined this season.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this is what I think. I think we can all agree that we want Mike Leach to be a coach somewhere, just not at our team.
Not so fast, Michael.
you might take him down. You might take him down at Ole Miss.
Have you seen the train wreck that is Ole Miss? I would take the Fair pirate. Enough. I would take the pirate just for the humor alone at this point.
I heard that, man. I heard that. Well, it was a pretty exciting week in college football. You know, picks went good and bad. If you listen to our Saturday special, I think we nailed a lot of those analysis.
Yeah. Our picks were better on Saturday than my three individual that we're about to break down now.
And that's the beauty of it, because that's where I was headed, Petty. It's time to recap our last week's picks, which I know is your favorite part of the podcast right now and will be my favorite one day because, like I said, it's coming. But tell me, Petty, how'd your picks do this week?
I think I'd rather watch a football game commentated by Bill Curry and Booger McFarland than go over my picks. It's bad. Like I said, I'm a train wreck right now. I'm the Rocky Top of picks. I had Utah -3 on Friday night and felt good about it because USC is their coach was a dead man walking and may have righted that ship. Helton was struggling. Their second string quarterback who was starting the game gets knocked out. A kid named Matt Fink comes in. They might as well just call him Matt Castle because the kid proceeds to throw for 350 yards and absolutely torch number 10 Utah's pretty stout defense. And
I was watching this game, Petty, and I remember I was texting you while it was going on. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. You know, the second string quarterback in his defense played two plays. The first play, yeah, he hit a really nice slant for 10 or 12 yards right across the middle. And I was like, wow, that looked pretty good. And the second play, I can't remember if it was a run or a pass, but he took a helmet to the chin and he saw Tweety Birds and that was it for him. And so the third string guy comes in and that's when I text you. I was like, third string quarterback coming in. Looks like this pick's going to be great. And boy, were we wrong.
Yeah. I'm sitting in the stands of one of the worst little high school towns in Alabama, already in a nightmare. And I'm thinking, well, at least this is going good for me. Yeah, no. Matt Fink Castle just stuck it to me.
So 0-1 on the first pick. USC actually beat the tar out of Utah.
Yeah. I had the over in Missouri and the Cox. It was 63. I'm not going to lie. Midway through the third quarter, I was feeling pretty spiffy about this. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to go over on the weekend. And then the fourth quarter happened and they didn't score a point.
So Missouri and South Carolina, what was the final score in that game?
I think they got in the 50s.
Got in the 50s?
Yeah,
so
it was
by a few points.
I needed them both to score a touchdown in the fourth quarter, which I felt good about. I figured Mizzou would get one more and then possibly South Carolina would get one of those garbage ones that seemed to happen a lot. But no, they all just started playing defense. It was awesome.
Nice.
And then my last pick was the one we kind of discussed earlier in our NCAA breakdown. I had Georgia -14. The whole world was on it. The alarms should have been going off in my head, and I said, nope, I stuck with my guns and right to 0-3.
Oh, man, yeah. So 0-3. Last week we were 5-5-2, so that brings you up to 5-8-2, which does not look as good. Again, the beauty of all this is that reverting to the mean works on the other side as well. So we should be expecting a big week from Petty coming up pretty soon.
That's right. And I should probably quit right now, but I'm no quitter.
Hell no. No, we're not quitters around here. No. We're going to keep picking them to the end, and we're going to keep on counting our score no matter how bad it gets.
It could get ugly. Well, Michael, tell me about your week, man. How'd you do?
Well, you know, I did exactly like I've done every single week, just about. I was 2-1. That's the way things go.
Well, that's a humble brag.
No, I mean, it's just that's how it's been. If you go on to my pick 'em, all I have to do is get 3 games right for my parlay, and I can never put 3 together. So I'm habitually 2-1. It's better than 1-2 or 0-3, I can admit. But
yes,
you know, hopefully I can stick with 2-1. I'll be happy with that all year. But my first pick was the one that I said, this needs no analysis. I'm not doing any analysis until I see anything out of Florida State. I'm just going to, and if they're giving away points, I'm going to take them. I did that. Louisville had a chance in this game quite a few times, but they ended up, you know, kind of getting pulled away there at the end, and they didn't cover the 7 points. But I'm not too upset about it because, like I said, I didn't put any analysis in it. I was just playing the, you know, I'm going to play against the dummy sometimes. So lost that one. That was my 0-1. My second one was the, like I like to call it, the WTF line of the week, where we saw App State only getting 2.5 points against North Carolina, who had overachieved early in the year. I said that App State was probably going to keep that close, and if you wanted to get crazy to take that money line, well, if you took that money line, you'd have made some money because they won that game outright. So that was a good win. That WTF line is 2-0 right now, so we got to keep our eyes on those.
It is.
And then
hint, hint.
Well, you know, we might find another one this week. I'm not sure. And then our third one was the, you know, going back to the well on fading UMass, coastal team that had played, you know, Kansas pretty good, heading up to UMass. And again, not even close. This was my obscure game again. Those are 2-0 as well. 62-28 final score, full on blowout. So, you know, that put together another 2-1 week for me.
Michael, I see a trend of you betting on teams that nobody even looks or thinks about and nailing them. Man, I may lay away if I may lay off any team that anybody's ever heard of, and if I were you at this point, and just keep taking these crazy things, because man, it has been to coin one of my favorite terms from the 90s ESPN sportscasters. I mean, you're in fuego. That's
dude. Yeah. No. Well. On these type of games are the things where I've really kind of made my money over the time, is looking for those games that other people aren't really looking at. Looking at a game, like you said, Georgia Notre Dame, it's being analyzed by 150 mm-hmm. different people over and over and over again. There's enough bets on it to where you can just draw the, you know, the line in between all the bettors and almost point to what the score is going to be at the mm-hmm. end of the game. So they've got a lot of data on that stuff. I try to find the, you know, I'm a data guy. I'm a little bit of a nerd.
Yeah.
People probably don't know him. Heavy math nerd and all that stuff. So I like to run regressions and things like that. But yeah, so I, you know, those are the ones where I look to try to find an advantage. And I'm always the big firm believer, you know, you'll be out there betting with your friends and somebody will score a last second touchdown and they'll be like, yeah, what a great call. I won this game. That's not a good call.
No,
if you win a bet in the last play of the game, that was just a coin toss and you happen to be on the right side. A great
Absolutely.
Call is when at the end of the first quarter, you put your phone in your pocket and you go get drunk because you know you won.
Great calls when you take Coastal -17 and at the end of the game at 62-28. It's not even close. That's a great – no, seriously, a 34-point win is a great call. Not a call,
Coastal,
like you said. Not a call
minus 17. Just let that ring, though. I took Coastal -17 last week, and it was a blowout, right?
I may try to talk you out of every bet the rest of the year on a team that we know the name of.
Right.
No, don't take it. But we're too dumb. We're too dumb, and we'll continue to do it.
Well, it keeps me at, you know, my percentage is consistent.
Two and one for the week again. 10-4-1 on the season, Michael. If you're following this guy, you've done pretty well. Now I know he's scared that he's going to revert back to the mean, but if you followed him to this point and not my dumb self, you're doing pretty well.
Oh, I'm going to revert this week because I made the critical mistake, and I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. So when it happens, we can come back and talk about it. But I made the critical mistake as one of the games that I like this week. I actually kind of leverage the points on it in our Pick'em League, which is a, you know, it's a death blow for me. Anytime I try to do something to get an advantage, it's going to come back and bite me. So be careful this week, guys. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that now.
I got my minor in psychology, and Michael's working the reverse psychology hard
No way. I'm just not very confident. I know how, I've been gambling for a long time. I know how this works. That's what it boils
down. I agree.
And, you know, and for those who've been gambling for a long time, they've probably been drinking for a long time. And that's the best segue into the Saturday morning cocktail we've had thus far.
Yeah, perfect. Love it.
Well, we've got a great one coming for you this week. And like Petty said early in the show, this is on my Mount Rushmore of drinks. This is one of my favorite cocktails in the world. But before we drop it on you, we've got to take a moment and get a word from one of our founding sponsors and the sponsor of the Saturday morning cocktail, Workspace Solutions.
Workspace Solutions of Charlotte, North Carolina provides web design, hosting and domains, digital advertising, social media management, and SEO to all size businesses. From startups to Fortune 500, they have you covered. Talk to Workspace Solutions about a new business idea, a new website for your brand, or their signature product, Digital Presence Management, where they take management of the web and social media off your plate. Visit them at workspacepros.com.
All right. Thanks again to Workspace Solutions for making this spot possible for us. It's one of my favorites, obviously. And this week, we're going to bring you, like I said, a drink that if you are in the South or the North or anywhere and you like whiskey, you've probably had and probably order quite often. That's the Old Fashioned. Before I jump into all the, you know, the nitty gritty and the facts, Petty, are you a fan or do you drink Old Fashioneds very often?
Man, I'm not the biggest Old Fashioned guy. I'm not going to lie. I know. What's funny is that my Irish whiskey love came from the Peaky Blinders, which, by the way, starts next Friday. Peaky effing blinders. But this one kind of caught fame from Mad Men, which was another wildly popular show. And I don't think it caught fame from that. I think it kind of had a rebirth or a rejuvenation. And, man, it's just not one that I drink a lot of. I don't like whiskey mixed with things outside of Coke and Sprite, to be honest. I hadn't got that taste yet.
You only like your whiskey with poison, I hear you.
That's right. Awesome. That's right.
Awesome. Well, I do. And I love the Old Fashioned. It's a drink that I've been, it's probably half the reason that I even like bourbon and most whiskeys is because it was able to kind of culture my tongue to that harsh, awful, you know, aggressive chemical taste that is whiskey that you drink, right? So you kind of have to fight through all that to get to the flavors. Old Fashioned will help you do that because they add a few other delicious things inside there so that you are basically drinking straight whiskey, but with a little bit more taste to it. And flavor. I'm going to, and I know I told you guys that I was in Mississippi this week, and the last time that I did a remote podcast from California, I forgot my ultimate bar book, The Comprehensive Guide to Over 1,000 Cocktails by Mitty Helmich.
Pat.
Mr. or Mrs. Mitty Helmich, we're not sure. But I actually remembered to bring it this week, so I'm going to bring you guys a little bit of history on the Old Fashioned. I hope you all already know what it is, but if not, here you go. The Old Fashioned is yet another classic American cocktail created in bourbon country around the late 1800s. As legend had it, a bartender at the Pendennis Club of Louisville, Kentucky, created this fruity elixir for a local bourbon distiller, Colonel James E. Pepper. Like most classic cocktails that have been around forever, this one has gone through many transmutations since then, including the main spirit. The most traditional liquor, given the locale from which it hails, would be Kentucky bourbon, although blended whiskey is the usual choice and scotch has its fans. Now, I've never had a scotch Old Fashioned. I'm going to pause and say that really quick. That sounds disgusting. Well, it depends. I mean, there's so many different scotches. I guess you could probably find something that works in there. But taking a little further, in the spirit of true design, in which form follows function, this drink inspired a sturdy, heavy bottom glass of the same name, specifically designed to accommodate the muddling of the ingredients. So when you see those highball glasses with a really thick bottom, that's made for an Old Fashioned. That's where the essential character of this drink lies, in the muddling of the fruit, sugar, and bitters, the resulting juices producing the quintessential Old Fashioned. Many prefer to muddle the whiskey along with the fruit to further infuse fruitiness, and those who enjoy a little extra tartness use a wedge of lemon instead of a peel of orange or a peel of lemon. Variations include wetting the sugar with a bit of water, club soda, or even adding a dash of Cointreau. And when it comes to the final splash of club soda, the purists refuse. I do not have club soda in mind. And before we start talking about this, I'm going to dive into the recipe really quick, just so everybody knows what it is. It comes with a sugar cube, 3 dashes of bitters, a strip, and those are Angostura bitters. I I think I said that right. A strip of lemon zest, an orange slice, a maraschino cherry, 2.5 ounces of bourbon or a blended whiskey or possibly a scotch if you're a weirdo. 2 to 3 ounces chilled club soda. No, don't do that. Mark that off, guys. No club soda. An orange slice and a maraschino cherry. In the bottom of the chilled old-fashioned glass, you saturate the sugar cube with the bitters, add the lemon zest, mash it all up really good with a muddler, pour in some whiskey, and you've got yourself an old-fashioned. Now, two things about this drink. Number one, it will get you drunk.
It's actually, that's what's crazy. Like, when you just describe, all I think with it, like, it tastes really good. I should like these more.
And I think you will, Petty. And it's just because we live so, too many states away. So when I do see you, sometimes we get into the bougier drinks when we're out and about. And I don't have time to bring in the old fashioned. There are a lot of variations of this drink that I've had. Depending on where you go, if you're in a crappy bar, it's going to come out really sugary, sweet, and it's going to be a hangover in a glass. There is no hangover in the world that is worse than drinking old fashions at, you know, Galette's or something like that, where the bartenders don't really make drinks. They just pour together what they think goes in there. And if there's too much sweetness in this, because it is mostly whiskey, and for those of you who aren't, you know, experts on the human body, the more concentrated the alcohol that you drink, the more water it's going to push right out of your body. So you can get extremely dehydrated and come out with some headaches. But if you treat yourself right and have a nice spacer glass of water between everything, this right here is the ticket to a fantastic evening. You think Ole Miss is going to have a bad day? Two old fashions before kickoff and you won't give a crap.
So what you're saying is tomorrow before I walk into Bryant Denny, I need four.
You're walking into Bryant Denny?
Yeah, we're going to be there.
Oh boy, you are going to need a Saturday morning cocktail. Oh yeah, I'm going to send you a copy of this page right here so you can get a couple of these made up for breakfast. I'm just kidding.
Going to need it.
I'm just kidding.
No, I'm going to need it.
I hope the best. God, nothing would be better for me than if Bama won this game in a barn burner at the very end by a field goal, because where I am and my family and everything, I would just love for a good showing to come out of the Rebels. Not quite so good that they beat us. That's just for you, but I would like for them to play a good game.
I'll say this, man. I'm the biggest non-proponent of the moral victory. I think it's horse crap, yeah. But given the state of Ole Miss's program and the fact that the last 2 years combined, Alabama's won like 128-10, I would take a moral victory of just showing a pulse tomorrow would be acceptable. To be honest,
I'd be disappointed to not see a pulse. I would, I hope that they're going to come out and play like they're capable of.
I don't know, man. I don't have the feels for it, to say the least. But man,
our defense has holes, and we got a lot of freshmen, so there's definitely hope on the side.
Ole Miss's secondary gave up 330 yards passing to a dude I can't name.
They almost beat the best team in the Pac-10, though.
That's the thing. They did lose by 8 points to the 15th ranked team in the country. That's lost on a lot of Ole Miss fans, but that team didn't have Tua. That team didn't have Waddle. That team didn't have Ruggs, Smith, and Judy. Oh man, it's gonna be
on offense.
I'm scared I'm gonna feel like I'm watching the 1994 version of Tecmo Bowl where Steve Young just threw the bomb to John Taylor, Jerry Rice, and then when he got bored to Brent Jones over the middle. It's gonna be like Tecmo Bowl all over again.
Speaking of video games, I don't know if you ever played a little game called John Elway's Quarterback. It was late 80s just treat. You know, it was like somewhere in between 10-yard fight and Tecmo Bowl. You know,
exactly where it came
in. It was. And it was a pretty good game, but it had a glitch in it. And if you ever ran this play called, I think it was supposed to be reverse play, but the A was missing because, you know, it was made by a bunch of Japanese folks. So it was like reverse.
And you had two buttons.
Yeah, you had like all your plays you could call. And then there was these two little bitty ones at the top that was like normal play and reverse play. And if you clicked reverse play and gave the ball to get the quarterback, just would everybody on your team ran so fast that you could run all the way back and forth. You could run around the field like 20 times and nobody would catch you. And that's how I feel when Ruggs catches the ball. Like he was turned completely around backwards and made a catch last week.
Yeah. Yep.
And the cornerback was coming at him at full speed. And you're like, that guy's about to kill him. And he turns and hits the Jets. And it's like the guy's just reaching for him while he's peeling off. The dude's fast. I think he's going to be low 4.2s when he gets into the combine.
And I don't care that it was Southern Miss. Those guys are college athletes. Those guys can, they can, they're still fast and they can run. And when he caught that ball, and again, like you said, he was catching on him, and it was like he started hitting that, like playing PlayStation, X, and just was gone. It was nuts.
He's a fast guy.
So, I will need a Saturday cocktail tomorrow. I may try the old fashioned, but what you're telling me is there anywhere that has a mixologist in Tuscaloosa? Because it sounds like you don't need to go to the Galettes or the 4th and 23rd to get this. You need to go to...
Hey, buddy, I've already told you this. And listen, I know they're not a sponsor. So if anybody from there hears this, give us a call, because Catch 22, you go get the peach bourbon. I mean, the peach infused bourbon, get an old fashioned made out of that.
Done.
You will be the happiest guy in Tuscaloosa.
Roll Tide.
No, go check it out. That stuff's fantastic.
Will do.
But again, I love an old fashioned for me. If I was going to create a Rushmore, and I'm going to be thinking about this because we're going to do the Rushmore cocktail special once football season's over and we need a little more material to talk about.
That's right.
The first drink that I know for sure is going to be on my Rushmore is the old fashioned.
Nice. Well, I'm going to work it into mine. I'm going to figure this thing out. I'm going to develop a taste for it.
There are, and you know how I always read the additional facts about drinks, like, oh, when we had the Bloody Mary, we also had the, you know, the bloody whatever gross crap has clam in it.
Yeah,
you know,
the Clamata.
I can't remember the name because the venereal disease. I flushed it out of my brain. But there are several of these with the old fashioned, and I'm just not going to trouble you guys with it, because the old fashioned is good the way it is. Don't mess with it.
Period. Don't need to spin it off.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. This is not a Better Call Saul situation here. Well, all right, guys. That's our Saturday morning cocktail. Thanks again to Workspace Solutions for making this happen for us. And now it's time for us to break down some games for you. And if you guys have been paying attention, we have been spot on in our game breakdowns, outside of maybe a little Georgia might blow Notre Dame off the map. That's been our one glitch. Let's just say that one was wrong. But outside of that, we've been pretty good, even if we haven't nailed our scores and our picks at times. So this is when you really want to start paying attention if you're the football fan or the gambler out there. So, Petty, why don't you just take it away and let us know who we're going to break down this week?
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, Michael, I believe my saving grace at this point is I might not be picking against the boys in Vegas very well, but breaking this down has been pretty solid.
Well, let's hear it. What do you got for us?
All right, man. First game, we're going to go back to a team we talked about that played Georgia, and Virginia is visiting our boys Rudy in South Bend, Indiana this week. Number 18, Virginia versus number 10.
The Fighting Irish of Notre Dame.
The Fighting Irish. Touchdown, Jesus. Notre Dame's 11-point favorite. You know, last week, like I said, Notre Dame showed a lot of physicality that I didn't expect. This is the week they proved that wasn't just an anomaly, that they just didn't play up above their heads, because can they do it one week after play? They're playing another top-ranked team coming off a kind of a close loss. Can they pick themselves back up? And I kind of expect them to, because if they want a chance to be in the playoff discussion, they're going to have to run the table. So they can't have any letdowns from here on out.
And they've got to run the table, and so does Georgia.
Absolutely. And then you've got Virginia on the other side. They're trying to lay claim to that sacred second best in the ACC title. You know, they struggled last week against Old Dominion. They came out of the gate slow. I think they were down 17-7 at the half. But what's kind of been a growing trend with Virginia this year, and Bronco Mendenhall, their coach, he's kind of made them that rugged team that he likes to mold them around. And they didn't give up any points in the second half. They got a scare from Florida State earlier in the year, but did the same thing. Their defense kind of shut them down at the end. So we may have another real physical game like we did last week with Georgia and Notre Dame, with Virginia and Notre Dame. So it'd be interesting to see, is Virginia legit? Are they legitimately the second best team in the ACC? And is Notre Dame going to step it up?
Hey, those are two separate questions. One, are they legit, and are they the second best team in the ACC? I'll answer both of them. Are they the second best team in the ACC? Probably. Are they legit?
So absolutely you're saying not. The two aren't mutually exclusive?
Right.
All right. And moving on to our second breakdown, we're going to break down USC, another team we talked about that smacked me in the mouth last week, who crawled back into the rankings after beating number 10 Utah and is now number 21, facing number 17 Washington. Washington is a surprising 10.5-point favorite to open this one after USC looked so good with Mack Fink Castle last week.
Petty, I would like to say something right now, and some people out in podcast land might like to hear this, but this is my WTF line of the week.
I told you. I knew when we mentioned the WTF 2-0, I knew that that may be a seg.
Hey, and here's another thing. I go 2-1 on everything, so I'm 2-0 in my WTF line of the week. So this is a guaranteed loss, guys. This is a guaranteed loss. All the stars are lining up against this pick.
But I agree with you, man. This is one of those where USC beats number 10 Utah, who looked to be the class of the Pac-12 last week, and beat them pretty solidly. Washington lost to California this year. They ended up blowing out a BYU team that did beat USC. So if you're looking for some transitive property,
which but the is line not comes out, a good way to do college football.
Yeah, do not do college football on transitive property, because there was a few years that I had Ole Miss winning national titles when they won four games. It's not a good method. That's when I was 13. But anyway, Washington comes out a 10.5-point favorite on a team that just knocked off a top 10 team, and you say, "Woo, that's a lot of points." Yeah, that I don't know, man. That's one of those WTF. What? Why is it so high? What does Vegas know? What is Vegas trying to get me to do here?
To me, and this is the shocking thing about this, because when I looked at this early in the week, this jumped out at me. I was like, this is the WTF line of the week. And it was at 10, and it's moved up to 10.5. And I'm seeing like 70% of the people on, if I go look at like Covers or Vegas Insider or any of those things, which granted, mm-hmm. that data is neither here nor there, is about how good it is. But
yeah, seeing the accuracy is questionable.
Seeing a lot of people on Washington surprised me in a major way. And then I went on to Sportsline, and I can't say which one of the guys, because I think this is like a pay service, that talked about this, but all of their professionals were on the Washington side as well. So again, everything's lining up to be against me on this, but I am, you'll know in a few minutes where I'm picking this, but I definitely have an opinion on this game.
I'm not going to lie. Our pre-show talk kind of centered around this game, because I'm completely with Michael on this. When I saw that line, we kind of both kind of had we were talking about it at the same time. We were like, holy crap, man, this is Vegas daring you to take USC.
Not daring you. They're saying, look, begging 10.5 points. Come on, dude. This is a given. Take these points. They're 17-20. The number 17, number 21. USC just destroyed, a team that was supposed to be top 10. I mean, this to me just seems like that classic trap game.
But then you get to the end of the week and you realize 70% of the rest of the people feel the same way you do, and it's like, holy crap, Vegas has pulled the double Jedi mind trick on us.
Is what's going on.
Yeah, are we the suckers who thought we outsmarted? Because see, sometimes you think you outsmart Vegas, and Vegas is really just pulling the double whammy on you.
Very true. Well, you know what? I didn't even say a couple of things. The reason why, since we're analyzing, I'm going to throw out a couple things. Last year, if you looked at Washington, they pretty much handled everybody they played except for California. Mm-hmm. California's defense, they've got a couple cornerbacks that are fantastic, and they can shut down the Washington passing offense. USC doesn't necessarily have that level of corner, and Washington does. Washington also has a pair of corners on their side that are pretty mm-hmm. decent that can slow down USC. And the reason why this line is so big is because Washington should win this game by a lot.
Going away. Absolutely.
I mean, everything on it.
Washington should blow them out.
Everything on it from a analysis standpoint points to Washington. Everything from a perception Absolutely. Standpoint points to USC. And these are the games that I like to get on like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly, man. All right. And for our final breakdown, we're going to go to Big Ten country, as Michael likes to call them, the B1G.
God. The B1G. It's not that I like to call them that. They named themselves that. They write it on everything.
It's like you're mocking them. It's a mockery.
I don't know. I mean, am I mocking them? Who knows? If you think I'm mocking the B1G, let me know on the Facebook page.
I'll tell you where my vote's going right now.
Right.
But we're going to discuss the Ohio State University. I think that's getting trademarked, you weirdos. At Nebraska. And Nebraska's at home getting 17 points. The over-under in this game is 66.
Home dog, huh?
Home dog. Well, I mean,
my first pick from looking what you just said, Nebraska's getting 17 and they're expecting 66 points in the game. Tells me that they think Nebraska is going to be able to score on Ohio State.
I think they think that. And I mean, everybody has been able to score on Nebraska at this point. I said this several podcasts ago, and it still stands true. Scott Frost, at some point, your team is going to have to play defense. They do do that in the B1G. I know we make fun of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten for not playing much defense.
I also make fun of people when they say do-do.
Did I do that? Oh, man. I should have had another.
You need an old-fashioned, man.
I need an old-fashioned right now. I'm already ready for this game. But, I mean, seriously, the question is, I mean, Nebraska's given up 38 last week to Illinois. They gave up 34 on the road to Colorado, all in the second half. They gave up 21 to South Alabama. And you've got Ohio State coming in, who I think is averaging 70.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they put 50-something up on a pretty stout Indiana defense. Hold on.
We're gonna strike that from the record, everyone. Pretty stout Indiana defense will never come out of the words of our mouths here.
I'm telling you, man, if you watch them, Indiana's not a horrible defense for relative. It's all relative to the B1G. They've got a pretty decent defense.
I agree with you. I just thought that was funny.
But I'll say this. It's better than Nebraska's. It's better than what the boys in Cornhead land have put up. And man, I don't know. Can Nebraska score enough to keep this in a game? I guess is the question.
Scott Frost knows for a fact that this game is going to be probably the most watched game that he's been in the last couple of years because he's playing a pretty strong Ohio State team at home. Everybody's going to be pumped up about it there in Nebraska. You know, he has to have a few of those, you know, old UCF plays in the back pocket to try to get a few touchdowns on the scoreboard. So. You know, I'm not under any illusion that Nebraska's not going to lose by more than 17 points. I think that Ohio State could probably do that. But if there were a game where there could be a surprise cover, it would be because they have a few touchdowns at their sleeves.
I got you. Which may make you want to look at the total.
Makes you want to point at that total a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, we'll get to that later. That may be in our pick segment, and I may be jinxing it, so we'll see.
We will see.
All right. Well, man, that pretty much sums up our breakdowns for this week.
Yeah, those are three pretty good games. I mean, it's like a sine wave in college football. You have a good week, and then you have a really bad week, and then you have a good week. And this week's just, you know, very mediocre. Yeah.
It's very meh.
Very meh. So hoping we have some good excitement. Maybe we get some surprise. As, you know, we're getting into the fifth, sixth week of football. It's time for us to start getting shocked. And I'm ready to be shocked. I want to see a team that's not playing Alabama really jump up and kick somebody's butt this week that they weren't supposed to.
And I'll say this, even though the matchups may not all look as beautiful on paper as last week, that is one of the beautiful things about college football. Sit down and watch one of these games that's not one of the marquee, and man, there's always something crazy happening that's exciting.
And speaking of crazy, buddy, wow, I swear it's like you've got these segues just built into your head. We're about to step into one of our favorite segments of the week, and I'm going to get it right this week. I'm not going to call it the Idiots from Florida. I'm going to call it the Charles Darwin Life Champion Award that's presented by Custom Plumbing and Gas Fitters, and we have a couple promises for you this week. Number one, we're going to give you three nominees. Yeah. And number two, none of them are going to be dead.
Yep. And number four, this may be the most batshit crazy week of them all.
That's what I'm talking about. All right. So before we jump into this, we have to say thank you very much to one of our favorite people in the world, as well as one of our favorite sponsors, Custom Plumbing and Gas Fitters. So let's just have a word from them.
Custom Plumbing and Gas Fitters of Tuscaloosa, Alabama are your licensed, insured, and bonded plumbers and gas fitters. They are quality leaders in residential and commercial, new construction, and renovation. Contact David at 205-534-2800 and mention Week Zero Podcast for a custom plumbing t-shirt when your job is complete. Again, that's 205-534-2800.
All right. Thanks again, Custom Plumbing and Gas Fitters, for making this segment happen. Petty, without further ado, let's get into the Darwin Awards. We had a default winner last week, so we're not even going to worry about that.
Yep.
We're going to move straight into our nominees for this week, so take it away.
All right, our nominees this week. Florida is involved, but it didn't happen.
It was the first word out of his mouth, Florida.
Florida is involved, but it didn't happen in Florida. It just happened to some Floridians.
Okay, good.
This comes to us from The Advocate in Baton Rouge, This is my first. The first line of this may be my favorite, and what just sunk the teeth in: a Florida truck driver and her husband. Sorry if I'm being judgy, but when I think truck driver and then it says her husband, I can only imagine Large Marge from the Pee Wee's.
This is definitely a team driving situation, right? Or you know, the dude and the woman are swapping off the wheel.
Gotta be. Tell them Large Marge sent you. Well, the Florida truck driver and her husband crawled into a camel's cage to retrieve their dog at a local truck stop. Yeah, you heard it right. So a truck stop outside of Baton Rouge has a small petting zoo. And in this petting zoo, they have a camel, Casper the camel.
What?
The husband inexplicably is throwing dog treats into the exhibit. I wish somebody could have dug further into this aspect. Like, why the hell were you doing that? Well, naturally,
the camels like, do we know if camels like dog treats?
I think camels eat anything. Aren't they that like a cow? If you stick it in front of them, they just chew.
I've never cut into a camel's hump to see what's in there.
Water? I don't know. Well, anyway, so the dog went into the exhibit, started eating. Well, the animal started interacting, and these psychopaths freaked out. And the woman crawls up under the barbed wire fence to retrieve her dog. Well, the man decides to start waving and slapping at Casper the camel. And Casper freaks out and sits on his wife's head. His wife.
So the camel sat. So she's climbed into the camel cage under the barbed wire
to get the puppy.
To get the puppy because he was throwing dog treats into the camel cage, which so I'm really so shocked that the dog went in after that. That doesn't make any sense at all, right?
Yeah, yeah. Good gosh. Truck driver.
This is good Darwin stuff right here.
Truck driver's better half starts swatting at the camel to kind of, I guess, get him away with a magazine. And in a panic moment, the camel sits. Now, I don't know how this happens. Explain to me where the wife is when the camel sits that she ends up straight up under him. In a moment of sheer panic and thinking, how do I get a camel off my head? The woman goes to her most primal instincts and bites the poor fella square in the nuts.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Straight in the manhood, the man parts.
We got to break that down for a second. Let's take a step back here. First off, is that illegal? Because, I mean, I feel like that could get into some bestiality stuff. Yeah, I feel like she may have actually broken a law here by biting the camel on the nuts. And if it's not that, it's definitely cruelty to animals. Definitely.
First of all, why does a truck stop have a petting zoo?
I wanted to say something early, but I didn't want to just destroy your flow there. But I was like, what truck stop has livestock at the place for everybody to touch?
Apparently, used to have alligators and all kind of crap. God bless. I don't know. It's in Louisiana. Those people are crazier than the Floridians. They just don't do it as publicly, I don't think.
So, first off, number one, after she bit the camel in the testicles, did it kick her? Did she survive? Were they able to get her out? And were the police calling? Those are my questions.
Okay. She survived. The camel did what any dude would do, hopped the freak up and got out of there. Get away from
kind of a smart move on her part.
Crazy woman bites me in the balls. I'm getting the flip on out of there. That's what the camel did. He's smarter than these people.
He might throw a kick in on the way out, though, just for good measure.
Cops were called. And in an amazing turn of events, not really an amazing turn of events, the people were actually charged with trespassing because there was a no trespassing sign on the fence. So they were actually breaking the law and ended up getting the
dog and the woman. The dog and the woman were breaking the law. The man did nothing wrong except throw dog treats and
dumbly throw dog treats. So there you have it.
Woman. So candidate number one or Darwin nominee number one, woman, TLDR, too long, didn't read. Woman sticks, man throws dog treats into camel's cage. Dog runs in to eat treats. Woman reaches inside or climbs inside camel cage to retrieve dog. Camel sits on woman's head. Woman bites camel's balls. Camel jumps up, runs away. Everyone's happy except for the cops come and give them a simple trespassing ticket. I feel like there could be a better ticket than that.
There needs to be a Euromoron ticket that's unpayable.
That one's pretty good. Well, if that's the first one, I know you wouldn't throw the best one at me at the beginning. So let's see what you got for number two.
I think we may sandwich it, man, because it gets strong. This one maybe not as good, but was just kind of funny to me and kind of ticked me off at the guy for what it caused. But this one comes to us from Fox News. A Swiss man and his girlfriend were at the Disney Paris and decided to take LSD.
Okay.
Well, naturally, taking a substance like that in a place that crazy, they may have gotten separated from each other and she lost her boyfriend. To the point where she couldn't find him, the park got dark, the park closed, and they ended up having to dispatch 30 firefighters, 10 police, 80 employees, which I can only imagine were thrilled after dealing with idiots all day, having to stay a few extra hours to look for this jerk, dogs and helicopters to find him. They found him in a body of water somewhere on the property where he had fallen hours earlier and apparently had fallen and could not get up. He was in his own.
Well, the first thing that I take away from this story, just hearing that, is it's clearly it was her LSD.
Oh, yes. She supplied him.
If it had been his, he would have been able to handle it.
That's right. Yeah, he would have known what was
clearly coming. It was hers and he couldn't handle it.
Yeah, she gave him the good stuff, and he did not know what to do, so he found a bottle. They're lucky they didn't find him floating in the water trying to, who God knows. But, man,
they were both taken in. Did they find him?
Oh, yeah, they found him. They found him just sitting there, kind of like, I think the new term is crisscross applesauce in our politically correct society. You can't say, if you don't have a kid, you don't know this, Michael, but you can no longer say Indian style.
Gotcha.
Found him crisscross applesauce by a body of water, I guess.
Can you just say cross-legged? Because I don't really put my food into... I don't like injecting food into my body positions.
I say it more angrily because I think that's dumb. It's Indian style.
It's the same reason that I don't say pizza and french fries when I'm skiing.
Yeah, there's principle. There's Petty principles.
Never learned pizza. Nobody taught Petty pizza. Petty got out there and put skis on his feet and skied down the hill. There was no food involved.
Yes, I didn't do french fries. Dang it. I might have wanted some, but no. But they found him hours later, like I said, sitting next to a body of water, lost in his own world. Both were taken in after, wasting everybody's time. Both were taken in and detained for the legal use of narcotics in park. The good news is it didn't seem to disrupt any of the other park attendees or the activities other than the police and the firefighters and the employees.
So in this one, in our first one, I'm pretty sure that the couple together jointly get the Darwin nomination because, he threw the dog biscuits in and she stuck her head under the camel's ass. So that was clearly, a couple one. But I feel like in this one, we should give the award to one of the two. Now, who do you think is the nominee here?
The female for not knowing that she was with a dude that couldn't handle his stuff.
I agree with you 100%. Yes. For not keeping up with him when that happened.
I mean, if you're going to do that, you better give it to a well-trained hippie that knows how to handle himself.
You need yourself a dreadlocked Sherpa.
Yeah. one of these creatures from the Blue Lagoon that comes to these concerts that you wonder where they come from, where they go the rest of the week.
Right. More commonly known as Wookiees.
Yeah. See, any widespread panic show.
Oh yeah.
And fish.
All right. So what do we got for number three? That was a good one. Let's see what we got for three.
This one you brought to my attention, Michael. It comes from the UPI. And I believe you got the acronym for that.
Yeah, that's the I forgot. I wanted to make a joke about this, but it's like the something press something. But what's really important is they used to do a football poll back in like the 50s and the 60s. And some of us have national championships with them that may not have
anywhere
else. But
Ole Miss holds up three fingers when you talk
that's
UPI,
right,
baby.
That's right. It's like the Golf Digest one that Auburn got in 2003, right?
They count to me. Well, this one, Colorado as a state had to issue a warning about not putting wildlife in one's car. And as you
that
know,
sounds like first, that sounds like a given. What would cause you to need to put a sign that says don't put wildlife in your car?
Well, Michael, inevitably in life, you've walked up to some sign or warning and said, why in the hell would you have that on there? Who doesn't know that? Well, they have it on there because there's been some kind of causations to require them to have to put something so stupid out there. Well, apparently a woman attempted to rescue a wounded bobcat. you know, just being a good Samaritan, she saw this hurt little kitty cat on the side of the road that looked like it could tear your head off if he was healthy, and said, you know what, I need to save this thing. Mm-hmm. The problem
I don't have anything wrong with that. It's saving the cat.
No, at this point of the story, I'm like, hey, man, she's just a good person. She's not scared. Maybe she's got a little Steve Irwin in her. But the next line shows me that she doesn't. She placed this thing in the back seat of her car where her child was strapped into a car seat right next to it. And again, she's not Steve Irwin. So how the hell does she know how hurt this thing is?
So, she put an injured wild animal with her kid in the back seat.
Yeah. Put a blanket over on top of it right next to the kid.
Jeez, man, that is freaking terrifying. Maybe. Well, hold on. Is she training this kid to be a race car driver?
Ricky Bobby, if you want to race, you got to race with the fear. Here's a cougar. God bless. Luckily, the animal was too injured to do anything. And maybe she knew that. Who knows? But the fact that you put an animal that could tear your face off, much less the face of your child, right next to your child, and your child's in a seat where it can't do anything about it if it wanted to or had the ability to because it's strapped down, you have a bobcat. And she called the wildlife rescue when she got home. They freaked out and were like, hey, you were like, hey, you moron, you can't, you know, what
look,
did you,
what if this thing had just been hit and it was just kind of knocked stupid and all of a sudden,
oh yeah, what if it was playing possum
and just starts lighting everybody in the car, just starts tearing them to pieces. I mean, that is completely and totally insane. And even to top it all off, all right, Petty, let's just say that, all right, I've decided that I'm going to pick up a wounded bobcat from the side of the road. Me, Michael, I'm going to pick up a wounded bobcat on the side of the road and I'm going to put it in the car. Would I be a little bit less of an a-hole if I put it in the front seat with me and not in the back seat with my toddler?
You'd be a little smarter if that was the route you were going to go. Like, hey,
could you not have put it in the front seat?
Just the survival instincts of a parent. Like, hey, if this thing does decide to wake up from its slumber and go crazy, at least it'll kill me and I can get out of the car with it. Or no, man, let's let the kid be the guinea pig. Freaking moron.
She's probably like, this lady's probably one of those people that like accosted me at the Kentucky Fried Chicken when I was in college with signs and showing me pictures of chickens get killed and stuff. And this little skinny kid sitting out there as I'm ordering, and I was eating Kentucky Fried Chicken. I was a dumb kid. It was unhealthy. I know, but I was eating it back then. Right. So and this awesome. Guy's like holding up pictures of dead chickens in front of me. And I was like, dude, I'm about to eat one of those chickens. And from the looks of you, it looks like you haven't eaten anything in a while. And you should just get out of the way because, as it turns out, my whole family is chicken farmers. And that's how I was able to come to college. So get out of the way.
I was about to say, you could have said, hey, is that a picture from my farm where I murdered the chicken?
Right, exactly. I mean, not. I don't want anybody to go out murdering chickens or anything like that or whatever. But, you know, everyone you eat died somehow. So I just want people to maybe, you know, take a little step back and remember that, you know, nature is dangerous and crazy, and we do have a food chain. So,
and look, who says you can't learn things from a comedy? I'm always reminded of that scene in Tommy Boy when they get the deer.
Yes. No, that's the scene I was thinking about when you told me the story.
Yeah. And they put the deer in the back of the car, and it's one of those, it's not as funny after you, but the first time you see it, you almost pee yourself because the deer goes crazy and starts kicking out the windows. That's all. If I see an animal on the side of the road, that's all I can think is if I put this thing in my car, it's going to Tommy Boy my car and go nuts. But this is actually a bobcat,
with claws.
Not a deer. This thing's ready to rip your face
claws
off.
Claws suck even more.
I think we got a solid candidate.
We finally hit our groove on the Darwin Awards this week, I think. We have three legitimate candidates, and we're going to choose one next week, and we would like your help. So
it's going to be hard.
If anyone could jump on to weekzerosports.com. You'll find links to all of our social pages. We have Twitter and Facebook are probably the best places to go. Facebook.com/WeekZeroSports or @WeekZeroSports on Twitter. And let us know your vote for the nominee because we're going to make this a fan poll from now on. We hope we've got enough listeners now for that to work. So let's see how it goes.
And don't make us pick. I can't pick this week. This is the one week where me and Michael usually look at each other and don't even discuss it like, oh, we've got a winner. I don't have a winner. We need your help.
Hopefully we can get a few votes from you guys because, as Petty said, this is going to be very difficult to decide. Well, that brings us to everybody's favorite segment. This is the one that a lot of people just fast forward all the way to. And this one's brought to us by DreamWork Financial Group. This is our weekly pick three. And let's take a quick second to hear a word from DreamWork.
DreamWorks Financial Group of Birmingham, Alabama is a registered investment advisory and fee-only fiduciary. They offer personalized portfolios, wealth management, and custom investment funds. Chief Financial Strategist Clint Kirby says, don't settle for an ETF or a mutual fund when you can own the underlying stocks. Check out their Spectre and Tempo funds at dreamwork.financial/week0. Disclaimer, investments involve risk and unless otherwise stated are not guaranteed. Be sure to consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy.
And thank you very much, DreamWorks Financial Group, for making this spot possible. Petty probably is not as happy with you as I am right now. But again, we know this is going to change by the end of the year because that's how it works. So without further ado, Petty, and you know, for those of you who haven't listened before, we pick three games against the spread every week. We're going to keep up with our record throughout the season. So let us have it, Petty. Tell us what's going to happen this week.
All right, I'll tell you what's going to happen. I've been begging Michael to add a little sound effect before this one, that kind of the ching, 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 the money from Pink Floyd sound, because, you know, we're making money.
I like that.
Actually, I would like now it just to be the car crash effect of, because that's what my picks are, a car wreck. But by gosh.
Well, you know, reverting to the mean can be.
We're reverting to the mean positively this week. I feel it. I feel it in my bones. We're at least going to win one this week. So my first pick comes from the game I'm actually going to be at tomorrow. Ole Miss at Bama. I actually wanted to jump on the line when it was 32, but Michael wouldn't let me have it. And if we keep going, I might have to get it at 60. But we did settle it. I think it's moved up to 38, but we stopped it at 35.5 when I actually claimed that I was getting in on it. So when I got my ticket, it was 35.5. Of course, I'm going to bump that down to 35 and take all the help I can. I don't see how Ole Miss keeps this close. I don't think they have the offense. I think Tua is going to have a field day. I think Tua will be out by the third quarter. But the problem is, I don't think Ole Miss can stop Mac Jones. I don't think they can stop little brother Tua. The question is, can Ole Miss score any to even make this competitive? And I'm not sure they can enough. So I'm taking Bama minus 35 against my Rebels.
Well, I'm not touching that one because that's too many points for me. And I know that, you know, crazier things have happened with Ole Miss and they could definitely put up some points on us. I'll just be sitting there hoping for the W and trying to keep my mouth shut and not tick off anybody here in Ole Miss country. That's a pretty good one though. All right. So first pick, you got Bama minus 35.5. You're buying that to 35. What do you got for that second pick?
My next pick is going to one of the games we broke down, Ohio State University in Nebraska. As we talked about, Nebraska's had a hard time stopping anybody from scoring. Playing at home, though, we both kind of feel like Nebraska can put up a few points. This is going to be one of those games, though. If it comes to the fourth quarter and they've somehow played some defensive struggle, I'm going to lose my mind because there's no way it should happen. I expect Ohio State to be able to put up at least 45, 50 of their own. That means Nebraska just needs two or three touchdowns. Three touchdowns if they only put up 45. The over-under 66.5. I'm buying it down to 66 and taking the over in that one.
All right. So you're looking for 66 points. You're expecting a shootout like we talked about earlier. That's an interesting pick right there. I could see this game being in the bazillions, or to be perfectly honest, I have no idea what's going to happen in this one, man. So good luck.
Yeah, watch Ohio State win like 42-0 or something stupid.
Yeah, that would be frustrating.
That could make me a very agitated man. And my next one, and this is dumb, but let's be honest, when you've been 1-2 and 0-3, how much worse can you – it can't get much dumber. So I'm going back to the well in the first game. The Bama-Ole Miss over is 61. Bama scored 60 the last 2 years in this game. I think Bama's offense is even better this year. Ole Miss's secondary is atrocious. They gave up record-setting numbers to a quarterback that averaged 200 yards passing last week, and I don't think that cat had four NFL receivers to throw to. I don't see how their secondary can keep this in it. The question is, if Bama only scores 55, can Ole Miss score a touchdown? I would like to think they could at least get some. If New Mexico State can put 10 on the board somewhere, you'd think Ole Miss would find a touchdown somewhere in there. So 55-7 wins this for me, so I like the over in this one.
That sounds like a pretty solid pick to me too there, Petty. You know, I wouldn't disagree with you on that one. So I think that's probably
– people are probably questioning my Ole Miss fandom here. I'm just all over – I'm all in defeatist mode right here. But look, man, call it defeatist.
What's this guy doing for us? He's supposed to be a rebel, you know? Yeah. You're like Jay Barker or Greg McElroy.
Well – there's a difference in being a rebel and being a realist. I'm not doing that. The Greg McElroy is like, I'm just trying to stay down the middle to stay down the middle. This is just me calling calling a duck a duck.
You're calling it like you see it. Greg McElroy sometimes tries to go against Bama to look cool.
Yeah, and turn the point.
One of the best posts I ever made on Reddit that got the most upvotes than anything ever was Greg McElroy sucks as a commentator. That's all I wrote. Greg McElroy sucks as a commentator. It got like 2,000 upvotes. I was like, well, you know, that Reddit has spoken.
Loved him as a quarterback. I actually met him a few times on campus.
Love him as a person.
Super nice kid. Yep. He sounds like a robot.
He's trying to be the next Herb Street, and he's just literally watching the tape and regurgitating it, which, again, don't get me wrong. Loved him as a quarterback, you know, anything, just support Bama or whatever. But if you're going to get up there and you're going to suck, just be a homer, you know, be like me. Just accept defeat, be a homer and be like, I suck. So that's all I got going for me. I'm a homer. So that's it.
All right. Well, those are my sure to fail picks, Michael. What have you got?
All right. Well, mine are going to be pretty quick this week because we've already gone over one of my games in depth too, and that's USC at Washington minus 10. Mm-hmm. For anybody that's made it this long in the podcast, I think this is trap game of the year. I feel like the average over the counter better is going to be taking USC in this one, thinking 10 points is just way too much. I think it's probably 10.5 right now. So we're going to call it 10 because I'm going to buy that anyway, if it comes down to it. But if it's 10, I'll just leave it there and it'll be a push if it's 9.5, whatever. But that didn't make any sense. You guys know what I mean. That made no sense whatsoever. What I'm saying is if the line's 10.5 when I bet it, I'm buying it to 10. If it's 10, I'm leaving it at 10 and I'm not buying it to 9.5. I think these beers are a little strong down here in Mississippi, man. Did you notice that? Wow.
Mississippi, she's calling.
I guess I'll have to shout out to Wiseacre Brewing Company in Memphis, Tennessee as well, because this Ananda
y'all are IPA kicking Michael's delicious. Butt.
Yeah, so gotten a little wobbly here for my pick three, so let's do it. All right, that'll give me a good excuse.
Love
I
it.
Three. So you got me first.
Drunk picks are exactly. The best picks.
Washington minus 10, USC at Washington taking the home favorite. For my second game, I'm sticking with the Pac-12, and again, these are things I don't do a lot. I don't like to bet around in the Pac-12 because usually I'm asleep before the games are over. But lucky for us, I think this one's probably an afternoon game.
And crazy crap always happens.
Who knows? But anyway, I'm going to take Arizona State +4 at Cal. I think Arizona State's probably going to have a bounce back. Herm's going to have them working hard out there. You know, they lost kind of a heartbreaker at Colorado last week. Cal's all defense. That's all they are. So this game, I don't know who's going to win this game, but I think it'll probably be a 3-point game in the end. You know, and that's where I'm looking to play. Honestly, I think Arizona State's going to win the game outright. That's why I picked this one, because I felt like the line was off enough for me to select it. So that's where I'm at on that one.
you bet to win the money.
Yeah, you bet to win the money. Cal's coming back from Mississippi, so they had a long trip last week. I just see this as
a hard fought game. Let's be real. They had to fight through that thing.
And all week, all they've heard about is how the refs, this, that, and the other. It's just been a lot of distractions. So for me, this is another one of those perfect storms. So I do like Arizona State. Take those points. Take the money line if you're crazy.
Like it.
And for my last game, I'm coming all the way back over to the ACC, Far East. And it's going to be those Demon Deacons. They're headed up to Boston College to play that Jekyll and Hyde anemic Boston College team that burned you with Kansas earlier this year. I think they're trending downwards. I like Wake's receivers and I like their quarterback again. Anytime they're playing in a matchup where I feel like they've got the offensive advantage, I feel like they're going to be able to come out on top. So I like Wake in this one minus the 6.5. I can't say I'm going to buy every point because that just defeats the purpose of gambling. So I'll just leave it at 6.5 and let's hope Wake wins by 7.
And my note on this one, Michael, I actually like that you went to this game because it brings up a point that we hadn't made on the podcast that I was actually thinking about prior to this week. But we did mention, you know, Virginia playing to be the sacred second best team in the ACC. I actually think the Wake Forest Demon Deacons are the second best team in the ACC right now.
And I agree with you. I do, too. I think they're the second best team in the ACC.
I like their quarterback. You pointed him out earlier in several podcasts ago that this kid's one of those kids that's going to light it up and go up the NFL draft ranks. I also agree with you that Boston College is on a descending trajectory right now and have played like crap the last 2 weeks.
You know, when you pull the plug out of the bathtub and you see that little swirly drain thing going on over there, I kind of, when I see that, I think Boston College in my mind.
Yep. That's, I agree. There's no Doug Flutie on that sideline right now. I really like Wake, man. I do think Wake is the second best team in the ACC, and I think they're undervalued right now. So I like this pick. We'll see where it goes.
As long as you don't say you love it, because you've done that once a week for me and just burned me up on those. So like is fine. I'm good with like. That's awesome.
I almost used it last night, and it would have jinxed the game, but I didn't use it, and it worked out. The over in Memphis Navy ended up working out. I almost told Michael and our other buddy, hey, I loved it, and I stopped short of saying I love it because I knew that was the death blow.
You didn't want to put the hex on. That's what's up.
And it didn't happen. That. So it worked.
If you're going to give me some picks, I want you to not hex them before you give them to me, because that's just rude.
So, and they went over, so we're 1-0 early on this week.
Awesome. Well, you know, Petty, I've got some good news for us. We are coming in a little over an hour and a half this week, but I have a feeling it's going to be close to that. But even though we went over, I'm still going to save a little time for that fun fact. You got one for me?
Yes. This may be my favorite segment. I really get excited about this. I don't know why. And I've tried to, I'm not going to lie, I try to find this one line that just makes no sense and it's funny. I don't think this week is going to be as funny. I do. I think it does touch on Michael's heartstrings of hatred for one sport. But I think it may also touch on something that even the purists, because I grew up loving this sport. I still love the sport. I still follow the sport greatly, even though I haven't talked about it much on the podcast. But when I saw this stat, it blew my mind. The actual playing time, so actual action in a Major League Baseball game, is 9 minutes and 55 seconds. So under 10 minutes of actual gameplay, yet games routinely finish at 3 hours plus. And we wonder why it's the hardest sport to watch. 10 minutes of action and 4 hours of viewing.
That makes so much sense to me. That's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't catch it all. I was out getting a hot dog and talking to my buddies and drinking some beer. You know, I didn't see what was going on in the game. That's how I watch baseball. Like, I just going to a baseball game is one of the most fun things on earth to do. And I promise you, I've never seen more than like 15 baseball plays while I've been there, because it's just boring.
Well, you just touched on the beauty of it. That, you know, if you go to the concession stand or got to go to the bathroom during a football game, you're liable to miss an entire possession and not know, and the score be completely different when you go back.
You can go to the bathroom during a soccer game and miss the only score of the game.
But you do that at a Major League Baseball game, and there's a solid chance you missed absolutely nothing.
Yeah, no.
A pitching change.
Well, if I do the math, there's about a 95% chance that you didn't miss
That you didn't miss a thing.
9 minutes, 10 minutes versus 3 hours, you know, that math was a little off, but it's pretty close.
You missed the pitcher throwing it over to first base 7 times in a row just to make you want to pull your hair out. So again, not as funny, but I thought very pertinent to why baseball is having such a hard time getting viewership.
That is a really fun fact. Maybe if they let them fight during the intermissions and stuff like that, or just do something to add some action in there.
If you're looking for some action, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head, there is a pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds who is my new hero.
Wild Thing.
Cleveland Indians. Basically, is a few weeks ago, he ticked off a batter by hitting him. And instead of the batter charging him, this dude, like Jon Snow, one-man gang style, charged the entire opposing team's dugout with nobody at his back. So it's him going into the lion's den, slinging haymakers.
How'd he do? Did he come out in a stretcher?
He nailed a couple of guys. And, I mean, his backup, the cavalry came for Jon Snow, but there was a moment where he was completely surrounded by dudes, and he's just going like Mike Tyson style. And I'm like,
Can we get a link for this video put up on our social page? I'd like to see this.
Yes. Excellent. I will get the link to that. And then just last week, he hits, I think it may be Anthony Rizzo, one of the bigger name players that plays for the Chicago Cubs. And he got pumped up, and Rizzo started cussing him and said, get back to the dugout. And dude just like looks at him, grins, and sprints as hard as he can into the dugout, and then kind of gives a look like, okay, we good, buddy? I mean, just a complete sarcastic idiot.
Well, I might actually give this guy a look then. That sounds kind of interesting, but you know what? We're kind of bumping up on the end. And
I'm rolling too long. My bad.
Well, all right. Well, everybody, thank you very much for listening to our podcast. This is episode 7. Our viewership is growing. It's starting to grow a little faster than we expected now. So we want you guys to, you know, keep the listens coming. If you hear something you like, let us know on social media. Tell your friends about the podcast. You know, we're just two regular guys trying to entertain some folks. So we'd be very happy for every single new viewer you can bring to us. Or, excuse me, listener, maybe one day you'll get a video, but I don't think that's a good idea. I don't know if you've seen us. We're not that pretty.
I know. In my mind, I'm pretty.
You're beautiful, Teddy. Don't let me tell you that. All right. Well, that's about it, guys. Just want to say thanks again, and we'll talk to you guys next week. It's Week Zero Sports. I'm Michael.
I'm Petty, and love you guys.
Talk to you next week.